Today's show is brought to you by Ken Sanders Rare Books.
Greatest bookshop in the history of bookshops.
The greatest bookshop in the history of bookshops. Certainly the greatest in the state of Utah.
The greatest man in the history of men.
Oh my goodness. Did I have a conversation with Ken Sanders? We're about to air. Ken Sanders. You know him personally.
Yeah,
from
sure.
Making,
sure, yeah.
What is it? Making a murderer?
Murders amongst Mormons.
Mormons
making
murder,
a Mormon.
Mormons murder moms multiple times. Something like that.
Any
Mormons murder
M&Ms
moms.
And Mormons with
milk
murder.
Duds.
Yeah.
Mormons murder moms and milk duds.
Mormons amongst the milk duds.
Mormons among the milk.
Yeah. I think I know him from all of these things. The more
you
we talk
know
about
Ken
it.
Sanders. You love Ken Sanders. He's run a bookshop for years, decades. Ken Sanders Rare Books. We had a wonderful, just a lovely conversation. You know what I found it like? I found it dreamlike.
Cool. Like
it was dreamlike. Like I was in a dream.
Yeah, I don't like that descriptor, but continue.
I found it to be dreamlike.
What kind of dream? You can't just say a dream.
Good.
There's a million different
dream.
Kinds of dreams. Okay.
One of those good old-fashioned dreams.
Oh, boy.
I love a good dream.
Yeah, I don't dream a lot, so I can't say.
You know
say.
Damn well I like a good dream. You, of all people, know that. Ken Sanders from Ken Sanders Rare Books and Murder Among the Mormons, which is a Netflix series. Is it a series?
It's a Netflix series. It's a three-part series. I haven't watched any of the parts.
I haven't seen it either.
Apparently, it's fine.
But Ken Sanders is great.
But Ken Sanders is, while not the star of the show there, he's the star of his own show, and he's the star of today's show for us.
He is the star of the show. We're going to end this show with a poem he performed exclusively for the Beehive.
And we're going to air a very long interview in the middle of this show where he talks about all sorts of things.
So I love Ken Sanders.
That's fine.
I'm professing that now.
That's fine. I'm not going to get on your case about it.
You know I love a good Ken Sanders.
I do.
You of all people. Ken Sanders Rare Books. That's what this show is brought to you by. Also go to thebeehive.com. You can watch all of these segments on thebeehive.com. You can stream this show live every day at 8 a.m. on thebeehive.com. There's a lot of things coming out. Newsletters. Various things. Attractions.
Isn't your newsletter all about M's too?
It's mostly M's.
Musings,
meditations, muckraking.
Oh, muckraking.
Misunderstandings.
I would like if you started musing about muckraking.
I might muckrake.
Dude, muckraking's a big thing now. It used to be a thing, now it's back.
Thinking about muckraking.
Yeah.
Thinking about it. All right, go to thebeehive.com for all things Utah and all things you.
I like go and find a bio of myself there.
I don't know.
Chris Rawl was born in 1986.
I don't know why the hell anybody does anything. And now, let's beehive. Are looking alive on a Tuesday. Boys, at Tuesday, boy, are you alive? My name is Clint Betts.
My name is Chris Rawl.
Question mark? Clint Betts.
My name is Chris Rawl, period.
Betts?
I'm very comfortable in my own skin. I know who I am, even if you don't.
Chris has a birthday coming up.
I do. Thank you.
I want everybody to submit three things they hate about Chris. It's a birthday tradition here on the show. Three things you hate about Chris. His birthday is March 27th. You can email them directly to Chris at chris@thebeehive.com. You can email them to kelly@thebeehive.com. Or you can email them to dearutah@thebeehive.com. Or you can just tag us on social media and put your three things there. We're at the Beehive HQ. There's a lot of different ways to do it.
Mm-hmm. You can literally do it anyway. As long as they get to us, just make sure they get to
us. I don't care how you do it.
I don't care either. I'm not a guy who's going to judge you for how you send three things you hate about
me.
It's
not something that matters to me.
I'll judge you for some of the things you say about me. Yeah, sure. But how they get to us, I'm not going to judge.
I can't remember. We keep it anonymous, right?
Yeah.
No, we don't. There's no way you
No, I think we have. I think we have in the past.
Oh, we
when
do.
We've done it on the show, I haven't said anybody's names.
Okay, yeah. We do keep it anonymous.
Yeah. So, like,
except
you can.
We know.
Well, you didn't know
I
when
don't
I
know.
did you because everybody sent them to me. Maybe you should send them to somebody else. If you truly are afraid and you
If you
go,
want to
look,
keep it
this
anonymous,
is some hard,
this is hard
hard-hitting
hitting,
stuff. And like,
muckraking.
and I know Chris will feel bad about this. You send it to Kelly or somebody like that. That way I won't know your identity and we can go, okay, here are three things from somebody. Oh, dude, okay, just prepare yourself, right?
I'm sending mine to Kelly because I don't want you to know. Because they are muckraking
I'll
items.
know yours.
All right, so send the three things you hate about Chris for his birthday. It's a tradition here, a tradition unlike any other,
Yep,
much like the
Yep.
Masters. All right, so let's see what's going on. I have a lot to talk about today in the Beehive.
Should we
There's so
just
much going on in the world, and there's particularly something going on that I can't wait to talk to everybody about. So let's go directly to today in the Beehive. But first, a word from our sponsor, Traeger. There's a Twitter account,
Okay.
a new one.
Checked or no check?
Someone created a new Twitter account.
Is it you? Are you gonna come out on air with your burner accounts? There's one called Blint Kets.
The Twitter account I'm referring to is at Utah Updates.
Okay.
At Utah
So an
Updates.
informational account.
Yeah, it's a parody account. They say it's a parody account, and they were using the seal of the great state of Utah. The seal.
The great seal of
The
the
great
great
seal.
state.
That's exactly right.
We have a great seal.
So there's a whole story here. It's a fascinating story.
Where from?
I wrote this. Muckraked it. I'm over here muckraking.
Muckraker Betts got to the bottom of it.
I got to the bottom of it. So at Utah Updates, I saw this account. Like a week and a half ago, and they were saying the funniest things. They were giving like updates on, you know how like the government, all they do is give updates?
Oh, yes.
Like, hey, you'll never believe two deaths on the highway in the past month.
And I'll go, yeah, I do believe.
Yeah, it sucks out there. The
Of course, I believe
highway
that. I
sucks.
believe anything that happens on a highway.
So let me give you, I picked a couple of my favorites from Utah Updates, and I'm
Okay.
gonna read them to you. All right, ready? At Utah Updates, this is their most recent post. Today, when we let Mitt Romney out to go to the bathroom, he just stared directly into the sun for 3 minutes.
That's a good update. I like what Mitt's doing. Is people who stare at the sun know that's a great way to harness energy. You know, we have a friend who's really into that style
Yeah, we
of
do
energy
have a friend.
harnessing. The sun, natural antidepressant. Yeah, there's a little bit of stuff with your eyes. That's not going to do well. But the amount of energy that you take in, supposedly, that outweighs the fact that you're like hurting your eyes, you know? So if Mitt Romney's doing that, which according to Utah Updates, they're using the Utah seal. I guarantee this is
They
true.
do have the
This
seal.
has to be true.
Here's another one.
Okay.
Who threw away that radioactive waste? The seagulls at the dump have gotten into it, and this is not going to be good.
We do have a lot of radioactive
At
waste.
Utah Updates.
Do you ever just think about the amount of radioactive waste that our state has? That's what we do. We take everybody's radioactive waste, we take
Listen,
our own. It's
I
pretty
think a
crazy.
long life is pointless.
No, it is pointless.
Sooner I can die than
No,
young.
I'm not against it. I'm saying we need to corner the
Just
market
end it.
even more.
Just end it. What else I gotta
We
do?
don't need to end it. We just go, look,
Just throw the radioactive waste on me.
if you have any radioactive waste, bring it here. We got a guy. We can throw it on him. He's not gonna last long. We could actually just bury it in the ground in these barrels like we normally do, but he apparently wants some sort of radioactive shower. I don't know what his deal is. He keeps talking about how meaningless life is. I don't know what's going on.
At Utah Updates is the Twitter account. Here's the final one that I loved. And they're all good. They're all 10 out of 10s,
Okay.
these tweets. I want to hire this person. Whoever's behind this account, you have a job here at the Beehive. A job, full-time job.
I hate that
Taking Chris's spot.
I'm getting replaced by some parody of me.
Whoever runs this account, call me.
Would it blow your mind if I indeed was the parody? And then you
Yeah,
just
it
hired
would.
me a second time and now you have to pay me double.
Ooh.
And it was all a
That's a
long
scheme.
con.
That's a scheme. All right, here's the final one that I'm going to read. It's again at Utah Updates. The Jazz Bear is passed out on the steps of the Vivint Smart Home Arena, covered in blood.
I mean, the Jazz Bear does a lot of dangerous things. It would make sense.
I love at Utah
Do you
Updates.
ever think about how there's just a person inside of every mascot costume?
I think about it all the
It's
time.
so intense.
I met the old Jazz Bear, the one that got fired. I don't know who the new one is, but I met the old one, and he was freaking ripped.
Of course he was. Have you seen the stunts the bear has to do? They're like hand standing down an entire bleacher section, running down the stairs and
No,
stuff.
you'd assume he's ripped. I guess what I left out, I kind of buried the lead. He was also like 55 years old.
Yeah, that's the
And he's like dunking from like the 3-point line, ripped out of his mind.
Here's what's way intense. So the big no-no for a mascot is to be revealed publicly, where the head falls off or gets pulled off. And like if you go out on the internet, you can find these random moments in time, you know, like a college football game or something, where they're doing all these sweet flips. It's a tiger or something, you know, and everybody's like, oh, this is crazy. And the head comes off, and you'll have the moment where the person who's like way into what they're doing, and they're incredibly gifted and doing all these crazy things that normal people can't do, the head comes off, and it's like the most embarrassing moment of their life somehow. And yet they were just performing these like Olympic gymnastic feats. And yet the head comes off, and they go, oh, I'm never going to be able to live
I
this
gotta tell
down.
you, so I went to a BYU football game with my children.
That matches up. Is this another Utah update?
This is not
Clint
this
Betts was
isn't
spotted at a BYU
this is an
football game with
original
his
story by me.
kids.
This is
Okay.
an original story by me. Hey, I have to keep crediting myself
Yeah.
for you. I go there. Nice. So, nice Saturday afternoon, right? Fall. Perfect weather. Maybe 75, 76. And, you know, we're mid-quarter or something, and there's a timeout. And Cosmo gets out there, and he starts doing the coolest things ever. And the cheerleaders and the, what are the other ones called? Drill team?
Yeah, cheerleaders, drill team, there's band, there's a lot of stuff that goes into this.
The dancers, they're all there.
Yeah.
Cheering him on. Go, Cosmo, go. Go, Cosmo, go. That type of stuff, right? And he was doing way cool stuff. All of a sudden, he does some crazy 15 flip up in the air, something insane, like no one could ever do it. Head falls off.
Okay.
What do they do?
Oh, every
The
screams.
cheerleaders and drill team
Smother him.
cover him. They really do, so you can't see who it is.
It's like the United States president when a loud noise goes off and
Secret
all the
Service
Secret Service
style.
just jumps him. If he's gonna take a bullet, we'll take it for him.
And listen, I've never brought my kids back to a game.
Well, it's
Scarred
terrifying
them. Scarred me, scarred them.
that the cheerleaders, the drill team, all these people who in their own right, they are all gifted at doing their dances and stuff. Their number one thing, as it turns out, is if Cosmo's head comes off, you got to give your life for Cosmo's head. You got to bury him. If one of you gets suffocated at the bottom of this pile, so be it. We don't care. People can't know who Cosmo is, which is very strange. If I know who Cosmo was, I'd just be like, oh, wow. Like, I'd like to see some of those tricks just in normal life, you know?
Oh, if I knew who Cosmo was, I'd never talk to you again.
Again, what if I was Cosmo? I could always be the man behind the mask.
I wonder if at Utah Updates is Cosmo.
Could be. I wonder who is doing that in general. Here's what I think about when it comes to parody accounts and stuff of this ilk. That's a lot of time
They're cool.
to invest
Oh,
in
yeah.
doing stuff.
What else you got going on?
Okay.
What's more important than
That's,
this?
I mean, I could think of a lot of stuff that's going on that you could
No.
participate in.
Anyway, so at Utah Updates, an incredible Twitter account, right? Just funny as F. And I say F.
Freak.
And I don't say F lightly. Funny as F. And Deidre Henderson, the greatest of all time, Spanish Fork's very own, and Utah's lieutenant governor, over the weekend or a few days ago, tweeted at this account because it's gained some popularity. It has more followers than you.
Yeah, I don't have a
Way more
lot.
followers than you.
I don't
So it gains some popularity, and Deidre hits him up on Twitter. She adds him. She's like, "You," and this is what she says. She says, "You are not authorized to use the great steel of the state of Utah."
Yes. Smite them. I love calling it a great seal. It can't just be a normal seal. It's awesome. That's the kind of stuff you say when you get into government.
Yeah.
Whenever you're smiting somebody who's lower down than you, you go, you are not authorized. Authorization is a huge word. Okay? You go, you are not authorized to use the great seal of this state.
And she screenshotted a code, state code, something of that name, something of that, like a code that says like, hey, you
The
can't use this
of
crap.
course, code 807,
You
you
can't
know.
use
You
this. Who do you
can't
think you
look, it's
are?
state, it's great state code. You can't use it.
And so who cares about any of that, right?
Yeah.
Everyone.
Oh, yeah.
The craziest thing happened. So she says this. Obviously, you can use it. She didn't know. It doesn't matter, right?
We got two very intense sides.
It doesn't matter. You can use the seal of Utah as your profile
I
pic
can?
on, not you, but generally on Twitter, you can use the state of Utah seal as your profile pic. It's not a big deal. It's certainly not a felony. But Deidre, you know, I don't know. She's in the middle of running the country, right? So she makes one mistake. Anyways, people start freaking out. Like, there's this whole, like, Twitter universe.
Yeah.
Who starts putting the Great Steel as their profile pic.
Yeah, people
in solidarity with that. In solidarity
finally,
with Utah Updates.
Backing up the little guy or girl, whoever it is.
At Utah Updates gets a little nervous, goes to a billboard. Oh. Welcome to the great state of Utah. A little bit nervous. And then there's these people. My favorite is like, all that is cool. Everything that's happened so far is super cool. I didn't. I should have.
If I would have known, I would have.
The Great Steel.
I would have changed mine to the Great Seal of Spanish Fork, Utah.
Anyway, there's a bunch of people who have like changed their in solidarity. Like, we're with the parody account.
Yeah, power to the people.
We're
power
against,
to the parody,
we're
actually.
We're against the lieutenant governor, that type of thing. All that's great. The funniest is there's people out there who are like, this is embarrassing to the state of Utah.
They're
like freaking out. They're like using it as a way to like hit Deidre, our lieutenant governor, the greatest lieutenant governor of all time.
You don't come at Deidre.
Greatest Spanish Fork Utah of all time.
Yeah.
And saying, like, I can't believe this. This is so dumb. Then this is what I want to talk about. Why do people think the world is always watching Utah? And we have to, like, put on some performance. Like, we're not weird. We're weird as hell.
Well, it's funny that you say that.
Look at me.
As the number one person.
I'm wearing a freaking old Utah jazz.
As the number one person who I always associate with the Utah trumpeting of, like, we're not weird. We're better than other states. We're a great
state.
We
are better than other states.
I find it very bizarre. So first of all, I mean, I'm a person on record. Embrace your eccentricities, you know, just like whatever they are. In our state, we love to drink a lot of soda. We have very bizarre things that pertain to this state that much more so relative to other states. That's fine. You know, we don't really care. It's actually funny to talk about it. You can go and trumpet it. Who cares, right? The weirder part is always we have a chip on our shoulder that I don't really understand where it comes from. Like, oh, we can't be. People are going to perceive us in this way because we use the Great Seal of Utah. And now it's turned into a controversy. Well, people just are going to perceive us in whatever way.
Look around the world. It does not matter that our lieutenant governor said this thing on Twitter. First of all, it's a tweet. Tweets don't matter.
Tweets matter if they come from a blue check.
Breaking news. Tweets don't matter. And, like, it went viral a little bit that she said this.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and people are like, oh, this is a bad legal take and all that type of stuff. And then there's tons of people tweeting, like, this is so embarrassing for the state. I can't believe this. Now we're getting national attention. Have you looked around the world?
Yeah.
Who's a shining example of being a human being or a state? Who?
Zero state, zero people. Which is fine. I don't care. I never look at a story coming out of Illinois and I go, how embarrassing is this for Illinois? Oh,
that's my point.
Nobody does
Who
that.
Who are we performing for?
Nobody does that for any state ever.
Who are we like, I really care about the state's brand right now.
Oh my gosh.
This is going to knock it down
a
bit.
You know what? I thought Utah was a pretty good state. I'm going to have to knock it down a peg or two. I've never seen something like this.
Anyways, Deidre, being the awesome person she is, and she is awesome, and she's from Spanish Fork, Utah, the greatest of all time. The greatest Spanish Fork, Utah of all time.
Mm-hmm.
That's Deidre Henderson. Being awesome, she's like, yeah, she sent out like some little gif. She's like, yeah, obviously that was wrong.
I like that
She's
part.
Way cool.
I like that part.
Just a total bad A.
Just do everybody, just go and do whatever you want.
And at Utah Updates, the greatest Twitter account to be created in the past 2 weeks.
Okay.
At Utah Updates, changed back to the Great Seal of Utah.
Oh, so we're back to square one.
We're back to square one.
So mainly the story is there was a lot of controversy about nothing, and then we went back to the original place that we were at the start.
My favorite is the performative outrage on the people who think that this is damaging the brand of the state.
Yeah.
Damaging our reputation.
Do you think that
what type of reputation do people think we have that we need to uphold?
Here's my question to you.
We're weird as hell.
Here's my question to you. Was the chip on the shoulder always there? You know, like I get back in the day, we always refer to people back in the day. We go, well, when the pioneers came out to Utah, they're freaked out. They're like, we got to build our own colony and nobody wants around and we're going to show them how cool of a state we can build. I don't even know if that was true to begin with.
No.
And then in that entire time span, you know, we're talking close to 200 years. Now we're in this time span where I'm like, when did it shift to where everybody in the whole state looks at any story and goes, oh my gosh, people are gonna think we're freaky because of this. And I go, no. People think everyone everywhere is freaky.
Be Young after the Mountain Meadows Massacre. He's like, oh boy, there goes the state's reputation.
Wait a second, a bunch of people just got like murdered in a field.
There goes the state's reputation.
Oh, what's the East Coast gonna think? What's South Carolina gonna say? That actually is kind of cool. The more I think about it, it's cool. It made me, if everybody subscribed to that same way of thinking,
what's South Carolina?
It'd probably be good for each individual citizen, because imagine just if you boiled it down to each individual person. So now it goes into my life and I'm walking around town and I see somebody's wallet fall out of their pocket and it's on the ground and I go, oh, I could just take that and I'll take what they have inside there and I'm going to be a thief. But it's not really thieving because it just fell out. And so then I'm getting ready to do it. And as I'm getting ready to take the wallet, I go, oh my gosh, what are the people of Idaho going to think if I do this? And then I pick it up and I go, sir. And he turns around, I go, you dropped your wallet. He goes, where are you from?
Utah.
I go, from Utah.
Spread the word.
Utah. And I start singing the song. I think it would make
Utah.
Us better societally speaking, because each person, if we had to answer for the sins of the whole state, we go, oh my gosh, Montana's going to freak if I take this person's wallet.
We had an earthquake last year. What's South Carolina going to
think? Natural disasters. You can do it for everything. I didn't put a bunch of food storage in and an earthquake happened and now I'm going to look like an idiot in front of Colorado.
The performative outrage on Twitter is so insane. We have to stop caring what politicians tweet. It doesn't matter. And then the quote tweets on top of it, like, oh, this is so embarrassing. We look so dumb. Look at this attention we're getting. We're not getting any attention. We don't look dumb. Deidre's awesome. Everybody makes mistakes. Have a little bit of empathy. Calm the F down. When I say F light.
I don't like that.
I don't say
I mean, this is our favorite subject to talk about.
It's freaking
crazy. People being outraged in general is always
mad?
My favorite subject.
Why are you mad that she said you can't use the Great Seal of Utah and then like a day later said, yeah, you can. I don't know. I got a lot going on.
Well, my number one thing is
who cares?
You shouldn't
Either
even
way.
Be mad about anything.
Either way, who cares?
Yeah.
Even if she didn't say like, oh, that was stupid. Who cares?
What if we started making bracelets that were WWSCD? What would South Carolina do? And we handed them out to the great citizens of this state. And every time we were going to dick up, they look down. They go, no.
Oh, my God. I love at Utah Updates. Everybody should follow at Utah Updates. I want to hire whoever's behind
the account. Will Utah Updates?
I will give a job to whoever has it.
I want Utah Updates to wrangle up the outrage crowd and become the account of this is where you need to direct your anger. You know I like that. I'm a rudderless man when it comes to directing my anger, and I always need a good push in the right direction. So I think Utah Updates could fill a void there, because I don't know of an overarching account for our state. There's individuals, you know, who really love participating in that, and they form a community. But I want an official state seal Twitter account that goes, today in the Beehive, this is what you should be angry about. And then we go, state code 15, you can't use today in the Beehive. We incorporated that.
We have the domain.
We bought the domain.
Gotcha.
Cease and desist.
So dumb.
What if, this is my last thought on it. What if it's somebody from out of state that does not live in Utah?
Hiring them.
No. And is not tied in. And it was a long con all along. They go, we're going to make Utah look so dumb by embroiling them in all these controversies. And then the people are going to get outraged and get mad. And they're going to go, oh my gosh, look how dumb we look as a state. And meanwhile, it's some South Carolina puppeteer. Utah falls again.
Here's the thing. No one's actually mad.
Yeah, nobody's
no
mad.
No one actually cares.
No, nobody's mad.
This isn't a controversy. Like 99.9% of the things that are on Twitter, no one cares.
No, 100%. I'll take it the extra
100%.
Step.
I mean, this is how you get presidents that, you know, can become president by tweeting. By caring about what a tweet says.
I don't care about what you say or do. You personally.
No. And why would you?
You could come and punch me right in the nose right now.
So at Utah Updates, hit us up. Send us a DM. You're hired. Yeah. Deidre, you're hired too.
Yeah. Who else? Cosmo, we'll hire
you. Cosmo, you're hired.
there's any like fine South Carolinians or whatever, however you say that.
You know what? I'd love to move to South Carolina. You never hear anything
the
embarrassing.
Gamecock State, dude, Myrtle Beach.
I never hear anything embarrassing
honestly,
about South Carolina.
Honestly, right now, everybody who's listening to the show, think about one embarrassing thing about South Carolina. Can't think of it. Point exactly.
Their lieutenant governor, use the seal all you want.
Hey, go ahead, pal. It's on us. State code 100C, on us.
All right, let's talk some sports. I have other things, but we'll talk about them tomorrow. Let's talk some sports. Now, no baller!
I'm going to piggyback off of a conversation you and I had yesterday. So you opened yesterday's show talking about the world of comedy and how within the last, not too long, you know, let's say a decade or so, the comedy world has gone from being comedy-based and turned into essentially a lot of dudes in suits sitting behind desks like these or standing in front of a studio audience and just kind of saying what they believe politically in a manner that's not really that funny, right?
Not just what they believe politically, like
what the majority of people believe politically. Correct. And so at the time, we were kind of talking about, yeah, that's very bizarre. And it's also bizarre because it extends much further than comedy, you know? This weird transformation that has occurred over the last, again, in a lot of instances, in the last decade or so. It has not just been comedy. It's been all of these things. And so myself, a person who's very passionate about sports, as this segment obviously shows, it starts going in my mind and I go, oh, this is something that I need to talk about tomorrow. Because over the weekend, the NHL, National Hockey League, and ESPN signed a deal that kicks in after this season. Seven-year TV deal. Yeah, exactly. That supposedly and pretty assuredly will be beneficial to the sport of hockey, getting in front of more eyeballs and hopefully creating a stronger and just a bigger fan base in general, right? So,
were we able to watch Avalanche games?
who knows? That's a whole other conversation. I don't want to get into it. Jeez. The Avalanche have been blacklisted for 2 years. Nobody knows where to watch them. I got to go on these strange streams on the internet. It's very frustrating. But again, that's a whole other separate thing. Okay. Back to the conversation at hand. So, you know I love the NHL. Playoff hockey is truly as good as anything for me as a viewer. I love it like with all of my heart. It's something that I just can't get enough of, and it's awesome. That really extends to my team, the Colorado Avalanche. When they're in the playoffs, like it's as good as anything I'm going to participate in as a sports fan. Okay, and so part of that fandom, there's a part of me that feels a little bit bad because there's not a lot of people who like hockey, you know, of the quote unquote major sports. It's lagging behind everything, including baseball, right? Which is already a sport that is not that viewed relative to football or even basketball or stuff like that, right? And so as a very big hockey fan, I always feel a little bit left out because I watch nearly every Avalanche game. I follow the league closely. I love it in the playoffs. And there's almost nobody in my actual life that I can converse with about hockey. So whereas you and I can come into the office and not even on the segment, you know, we go, oh, did you see Knicks Nets last night? And we start talking. And the next thing you know, we're an hour into some conversation about Julius Randle or Kyrie Irving. Like that stuff I really love and value when it comes to following and watching sports, right? Is just having conversations with whoever, whether it's somebody that I know and I'm friends with or just random strangers. And I can talk for days and days and days. And so hockey, I don't really get that with. And the times that I do, it's super, super, super cool because it's just something that doesn't come around very often. Mm. So there's a dude who works at one of the golf courses that I play at, and he played hockey collegiately. And so, like, as I've gotten to know him through going in there all the time, you know, I start talking with him and stuff, and I find out he's a big NHL fan. So now every time I go in there, it's like it satiates this part of me where I can't talk about hockey with anybody because no one really knows anything or follows it. So I go in, I go, dude, tell me about, oh, did you see that Penguins game last night? And we can get into the weird nuances of hockey, right? Which, again, huge, huge, huge boon for anybody who follows the sport closely, right? Like, if you think about yourself as a big NBA guy, if you were sitting in a world where you follow the NBA as you currently do, and yet almost nobody around you did, It's a weird feeling.
Lonely.
It's a lonely feeling.
I do feel lonely. Thank you for reaching out.
It is alone. Look, you're lonely in general. I don't think it has to do anything with sports.
I'm alone.
I think it has to do with how you carry yourself, how you look, like all of the things, right?
I don't feel.
You don't feel good. You don't feel good, and honestly, you don't look good right now. But that's, again, that's a whole other issue. We might get into that on Dear Utah or something. I don't know. I can't talk about that right now, okay? So I hear about the ESPN NHL deal. And as a person who wants more of those people in my life, people who can talk about hockey, I go, okay, this is cool in that sense. Unfortunately, there is the other side of the equation, you know, the old angel-devil conundrum. The angel is, okay, more eyeballs. Hopefully that means more knowledgeable fans, more people I can converse with, just more discourse about a sport that I love. The devil side is the day that the hockey deal is signed. The main thing that's passed around and is talked about amongst NHL writers alongside this discussion is, okay, this is probably good for hockey. And, oh, look already how much discourse is coming out about it, because Stephen A. Smith, the number one personality at ESPN, most of you will probably know him from First Take or a variety of other appearances that he has with ESPN, you know. I don't know if this is true. He's amongst their highest paid just talking heads.
Yeah, he's excellent.
He's pulled on to every SportsCenter segment to talk about any sport, despite the fact that he doesn't really know much of anything outside of the NBA, right?
Neither do I.
So he sends out a tweet that's just like, all right, I'm ready to get into ice hockey. So a lot of people are going, oh, this is sweet, because now a lot of just casual fans or people who don't even watch hockey in general are going to be exposed to a sport that they are not, okay? The problem is, within the last decade or so, and Stephen A. Smith's rise has kind of come alongside this transformation amongst sports media, alongside that same time, we've had a very, very, very stark shift in how sports in general are covered, right? In the past, it was more just kind of, hey, here's the game. Let's talk about what happened in the game. Okay, let's talk about what's happening in free agency. Okay, let's talk about these things that are hard and tangible and pertain to the games and the players themselves. And the shift has really, really, really taken place over the last decade, alongside the rise of First Take. If you remember back in the day, Stephen A. Smith Skip. And Skip Bayless.
Skip?
Who were like probably the two people most responsible in the sports world to like identify with this shift.
Skip's a legend.
Those guys would just get together, and instead of going, the Knicks and the Nets played last night, let's talk about the game and what happened and, you know, what was going on with the coaching. Here's some of the refs' calls at the end. What do we think about that? It would be that game would happen and we'll go, is Kyrie Irving the worst player of all time? And they'd have a two-hour show just built around this thing. And they'd scream and they'd shout, and it would just be this strange version of, like, I don't even know what to compare it to. It's
politics.
It's what politics has
they
also
stole
become.
That from cable news.
Okay. So cable news turns into that. Sports follows suit.
Cable news was always that.
Oh, cable news has always been that. Even better. So cable news has always been that. For some reason, sports were late to the party.
Yeah.
Which I'm not fully sure why that is. I guess I'm glad that I had time with, like, more normal analysis. However, sports has gone headfirst into this. So now I'm not going to watch programming on any sports channel, whether that's Fox or ESPN or any of the assorted networks, because it's all this. It's all Jason Whitlock talking about, is LeBron actually a winner or is he a loser? And there's a two-hour show about it, right? And I can't find anything that talks about the actual game itself.
I forgot about Jason Whitlock.
So now we're arriving at a very interesting place that I don't have a good answer for. When it comes to the NHL and ESPN, which is, you're caught between a rock and a hard place, is a sport that is not really mainstream. And you're taking good steps towards being in front of more people by signing a deal with ESPN. And yet at the same time, what ESPN has now turned into is a subset of what the political world is, which is just screaming and shouting and not a lot of smart analysis or really anybody who cares about that. And instead, it's just, what's a take? What's something we can build a show around that will raise eyeballs? What's something that we can post out on social media that will get people riled up and will get them angry? And then we can have a week-long back and forth about, you think Michael Jordan's better than LeBron? Let me tell you why not. And it just, it goes in these cycles, right? So now the NHL is going to be a part of that, right? They're going to pull Stephen A. Smith onto a SportsCenter segment. And I can assure you, Stephen A. Smith is not going to be watching hockey.
Yeah.
in a way that, like, somebody who wants to hear about real, actual hockey analysis, that person is not going to be satiated. You're going to get Stephen A. Smith coming on and talking about. There's a very famous clip from a few years ago. Dwayne Haskins, he played quarterback at Ohio State. He was a first-round draft pick of the Washington football team. He just barely got cut, right? And he started for one season at Ohio State, most prolific passing season in the history of that program, okay? Could not run for the life of him, like the least mobile quarterback you'll ever find, like Tom Brady, but even worse, okay? And so there's this famous clip that was passed around of Stephen A. Smith where he's trying to be this draft guru in hard air quotes, right? And they go, oh, well, Dwayne Haskins. And Stephen A. Smith goes off on this big thing of like, he's going to be successful in the NFL because he's a runner, right? And he's super mobile and he'll be able to run around and like gain yards with his feet. And so it was passed around on Twitter amongst the draft community that I follow that are actually knowledgeable and know what they're doing. And like half of them met it with my reaction, which is just like, well, yeah, this guy doesn't know anything about. He doesn't watch college football. He never does, and he wouldn't know anything about it. Why would I expect him to? I'm just not going to pay attention to that or give it the time of day, right? And the other half was the opposite. It was the outrage stuff that like feeds this apparatus, which was, are you serious? Here are some stats about Dwayne Haskins rushing. He had 2 carries for -3 yards for an entire season. You think he rushes? You haven't watched any film, blah, 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 right? Which is always bizarre to me that people are willing to engage with somebody that is so clearly in on the joke, right? Yeah. Like Stephen A. Smith, I will guarantee you, if you got him and sat him down and just talked to him and it was not on camera or anything, he'd probably be way funny. He'd probably be super enjoyable to talk to.
Oh,
and he
sure.
would probably be more than willing to just be like, hockey? What the hell would I know about hockey? Why would I know anything about hockey? Nobody even watches that sport. Why would I know anything about college football? Why would I know anything about any of this stuff, right? I just put on an act and I say things and people are willing to respond at such a high level that it's beneficial for me to do that is this kind of like alternate actor almost. And it's beneficial for the network to just push this kind of stuff because people are so willing to engage. So that's where we're at now with sports. That's where we're at with politics. It seems like we've kind of gone to the precipice and gone over in an irrevocable way because people crave this kind of stuff so much. You and I, again, like you can watch today's Today in the Beehive segment. You and I talk so consistently about the outrage meter and just people's willingness to engage and be outraged about stuff that does not matter. And if they truly were honest with themselves for even 1 second, they'd be like, oh yeah, I'm just not going to give this the time of day. And yet we've shifted so hard in the other direction that like people like you and I are not the norm. We're in the hard minority of just like, why would I get mad about some tweet from a state seal that's not authorized to use it or is? Why would I even think about that in a manner that like truly gets my emotions worked up, right?
Yeah, you wouldn't. You don't care.
Well, the problem is, I don't know if there's a shift that comes back from this style of talking and this style of discourse, right? Like, are we sitting here in 10 years and we've either gone back to more of a analytical style or we've gone into a different subset? I don't even know what that would be. And we're looking back on the last 20 years going, you know what was really weird in sports? When people got way into just discussing, like, a lot of hyperbole and a lot of discussions that aren't real discussions, but we would have every day for years and years and years.
No, look at, in the NBA, at Kyrie Irving. Kyrie Irving's one of the best players in the league. Probably my favorite player to watch right now. Kyrie Irving's so cool. He's so freaking sweet. And he constantly gets bashed on by these talking heads because he does like sage things on like, you don't actually care. You don't care that he thinks the world is flat or he's just saying that. He's probably in on the joke. He's probably way fun to hang out with. Who cares about any of that?
That's the absolute.
He's so much fun to watch play basketball.
The Kyrie Irving flat earth thing is a very, very, very good example. So that's something that Kyrie said, you know, in a, I think it was a post-game press conference for whatever reason they were talking. And he's like, yeah, I think the earth's flat. Right. Which again, if you came to me and said, Chris, I think the earth's flat, I'd just be like, okay.
Yeah, cool.
What, how is that ever going to do anything for me one way or the other? I just like, yeah, fine. Why would you even tell me that? Okay. And yet at the time it was met with just like, mock outrage or whatever you want to call it. And people are going, oh my gosh, this is insane. And so instead of being able to celebrate the aspects of Kyrie's game that are like scintillating and truly unique compared to every other player in the NBA, instead of doing that and going, oh my gosh, how does this guy who's actually way small compared to the other players, like how does he finish at this rate at the rim? How does this dude just like go off from 3-point range? How does this guy dribble in place and leave somebody standing there as he's completely past him and it's like
he's
really good defenders?
So much fun to watch. And if you're focusing on the dumb stuff like that, which is actually makes me like him even more. I love like the weird guys. What do I care? But if you're focusing on that and not realizing like Kyrie Irving is so much fun to watch play basketball, what are you doing?
Well, yeah, I don't know. I don't know. The problem is, I don't know how the road back from where we're currently at, I don't know like how that exists, and I don't know what form that would take. So it's almost like being, you know how you always hear the stories from old people and I make fun of them, and they always are like, I'm part of a dying breed when it comes to this specific area. Like, oh, I really miss this thing from the past and it's not coming back. And now I'm like coming to grips with it. I'm kind of at that point with sports media and how it's analyzed. I'm just like, am I part of the dying breed where like one in 20 sports fans, let's say, they're just going, I wish I could just get analysis and I don't really want to have to pay attention to any of this other stuff. And we're
The
not coming
debate's
back from that.
easier. The debate's easier. It's probably more entertaining for the masses. It makes sense why they do it.
No, I know
It
it
doesn't
makes
bother
sense
me.
why
I'm not mad about it.
I'm not mad
I'm not
about it
outraged
either.
about it. No big deal to me.
I want to be outraged about something. This is why I need somebody to direct my
Doesn't mean
anger.
much to me either way.
The
Life's kind
main
of meaningless.
point is there's actually never a good answer to like something like this, you know? You kind of have to make a deal with the devil in order to like
Oh, yeah, it's
get in front of more
great.
people, and
It's
so
great for
it's
the NHL, I think.
like it happens all the time in politics, right?
Oh,
It's the
yeah.
same style of transaction where it's like
Trump was great for cable news.
Trump would be the most prominent example of just like, hey, we both really disdain things about one another, Trump and the corporate media, and yet we're more than willing to engage with one another because it's beneficial to us in our own ways. And at the same time, on like the far end of the spectrum, it's like it's detrimental to us and to people, but whatever.
Cable news ratings are down so much, like an insane amount
Right.
since that guy left office. Anyway, all right, I talked to the coolest person, Ken Sanders from Ken Sanders Books. A lot of people know him from, what is it? Movie
Murders
Mormons,
amongst the movies.
Mortar among the Mormons,
Mortars, Mormons, and murder.
Mortars, Mormons Massacre.
Colon, Camp Williams gone wrong. There's blasting mortars away.
Ken Sanders, who people have been introduced to because of this Murder Among the Mormons Netflix documentary series, but that's the least interesting thing about him, and it's super interesting. This is the most fascinating character ever. So here is This is the Place with Ken Sanders, but first, a quick word from our sponsor, Rags. We're here with Ken Sanders, who is now famous. You've always been famous, Ken, but you're even more famous now thanks to the Netflix documentary Murder Among the Mormons. How has your life changed since this thing came out?
Well, Weston, be careful what you wish for. Whatever Z level celebrity status that I have, it's weird. I mean, I don't really do anything except talk and occasionally tell stories, recite poetry, what have you. So I'm really puzzled. The reason I've done it is because people over the years, decades now, people have asked, and I'm in retail. And to me, hey, the media is reaching out. I'm in retail. I'm trying to sell stuff. So I'll talk to them. Why not? But be careful what you wish for, okay?
So the documentary centers around Mark Hoffman and the bombings that happened, and all this sad stuff. But what this guy did, Mark Hoffman, he forged historical Latter-day Saint documents from the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints and tried to sell them to the church. I think he actually ended up selling a piece or two to the church, didn't he?
Yeah, it's a long, long, complicated story. And although Tyler and Jared do a great job trying to tell it, it's incredibly complicated, and it's more complex. Mark Hoffman was forging things as a child, for crying out loud. And I want to make one thing perfectly clear. People are saying, oh, he was this genius forger. He was this, he was that, the other. You know what? No, he wasn't. He and whoever else may have forged documents with him, they were as good as they needed to be to fool whomever they were trying to fool at the time. Most of the time, they didn't have to work very hard. Some of his forgeries are notoriously bad. And he didn't just do Mormon forgeries. That's a big myth. He certainly did a lot of them, and everybody from the LDS church on down got suckered and bought them. And yes, they were all victims, no more so than the Sheets and Christensen families that actually, you know, lost loved ones to his forging turned to bombing and murder. At the end of the day, Mark Hoffman is a no talent, low life scum.
Did you
be very clear about?
Did you realize that even back in the day?
Hey, look, come on. Hindsight is easy department. I only ever met Mark Hoffman once back in the Cosmic Airplane days in the 1970s. Long before most people were aware he was forging, certainly I didn't know. He came in the store, he tried to sell me things like Joseph Smith and Brigham Young and Jim Bridger and all manner of things. I didn't like him, I didn't like his attitude, I didn't like his personality, and I didn't like his stuff. Did I know there were forgeries? No, of course I didn't. But he and I did not get along. I never saw him again in person. He went into my old Cosmic Airplane store in the 80s and defrauded them big time, hundreds of thousands of dollars of forgeries, which when they couldn't or weren't able to pay them back because it sold them to collectors, that certainly is one of the big factors that led to the Cosmic Airplane's demise by the end of the 80s. They were one of, you know, dozens, hundreds of victims. But no, I didn't like him, but I didn't know he was a forger.
How do you think guys like Hoffman get away with it for so long?
Hoffman is a special case, is what I'm hearing. He was training himself as a teenager, young adult to pass lie detector tests. Who in God's name does something like that? Why? So he had a vendetta against the church. His ultimate goal was to make his forgeries of Martin Harris's handwriting, Martin Harris being one of the three witnesses to the Book of Mormon and Joseph Smith's visions. And then he was going to produce, you know, his biggest forgery would have been the 116 missing pages of the Book of Mormon, which allegedly were written in Martin Harris's hand. He, I think, greed and hubris and arrogance got in his way. And when the Library of Congress wouldn't buy the Oath of Freeman, when the Emily Dickinson Society wouldn't buy the Emily Dickinson poem, so on and so forth, his empire became crumbling down around him. And he, for reasons only he could answer, and even if he did, you couldn't believe what he told you, he decided to blow people up to throw the scent off his forging trail. Didn't work out so good for anyone.
Yeah, what a dumb response to that. But you are... Mark Hoffman is not the only notorious case that you've kind of been around or seen in your career. You are well known for your tenacious pursuit of book thieves. And I have a note here that says you organized a sting operation to capture John Charles Gilkey, and it's the major focus of the book, The Man Who Loved Books Too Much. Tell me about that.
Well, it's a book about me and my book thief. I didn't write it. And it's mostly not entirely accurate, but it's someone else's version of my life. Yeah, I can be somewhat fanatical, tenacious, however you want to describe it, as security chair for the ABAA, the Antiquarian Booksellers Association of America. I became known for chasing chasing after book thieves, for sure. Gilkey was a guy that was using the internet in the 90s to steal high-profile first edition books. He was a knowledgeable sort of collector, and he was using stolen credit cards to have books shipped from all over the country to his home base in the Bay Area. Took me 3 years out of my life to figure out what his MO was, how he was doing it, and then eventually who he was. And yeah, I set up a sting with the San Jose Police Department. They he had an alleged $10,000 first edition shipped to a Marriott hotel in San Jose, California. And Detective Munson and his crew waited there. Stakeouts are not like they portray on television and the movies. You know, boring 6 or 8 hours. And eventually, the thief himself came to pick up his package at the hotel. He didn't know anything about it, played stupid. Too long a story to tell here. But bottom line, took me 3 years of a lot of effort, and I did put him in San Quentin. Unfortunately, our law enforcement systems kind of operate on catch and release.
Where does this passion for books come from for you?
The womb, I think. I don't recall a time I didn't read. I know I was an early reader. My late mother claimed that I was born with a book. I mean, she should know. I suspect maybe that's an exaggerated claim, perhaps, but who knows? So I was there, but I'm not remembering things. I was wheeling and dealing comic books in grade school. I always read books. I read every single book in the Woodrow Wilson Elementary School library, at least the ones I wanted to. There were several I didn't want to. By high school, I was running a mail order business one way or the other. I've been buying and selling books in Salt Lake City for more than 50 years now.
You've also been a guest, or you've been an appraiser actually, on Antiques Roadshow. What has that experience been like for you?
I to talk about not seeing things coming in your future. 15 years, actually 2021. We skipped last year. We weren't able to do it. 2021, if we're able to go on the road, it will be this fall, I believe, sometime. It will mark my 15th year being a rare books and manuscripts appraiser for the very popular PBS show, Antiques Roadshow. They've been to Salt Lake City three times in their 20 plus year existence. The first time they did not have anyone from around here that knew anything about LDS or Mormon collectibles. That was a pretty serious botch. They realized that, and by the time they came to town, a few weeks before the show, I got a call from one of their producers saying, I'm trying to find someone that knows something about Utah and Mormon collectibles, and every single person I talk to says it's you. That's how I got my start on the show. Clearly, they've kept me around. I couldn't articulate to you why. I have no idea, but apparently I'm good for something, and I rarely get to do LDS collectibles, so I don't know why they keep me around. I suspect, back to your pre-show comments about my beard, if I ever shave my beard off, I bet they will fire me in a New York or a Boston, since that's where they're headquartered. Minute.
I wonder, where does the passion and interest for LDS collectibles come from?
Well, that was more of an adult thing. I issued my first rare book catalog of called Utah and the Mormons, and sold my first 1830 Book of Mormon back in those hallowed cosmic airplane days of the 1970s. It was out of economic necessity. You cannot proclaimed to be an antiquarian bookseller in the Valley of the Great Salt Lake and ignore the huge LDS collectible market. You'd have to be some kind of stupid. Plus, regardless of whether one is LDS or not, whether you're a member of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints or not, Mormon history is absolutely fascinating, and you cannot tell the history and development of the West without telling the story of the Mormons.
I'm sure you've held some incredible books and various collectibles in your hands throughout the years. What are some of the favorites that come to mind for you?
Well, I like the way you asked the question, Weston, because most people are, well, what's the most valuable book that you, you know, it's like, that's boring to me. The most interesting book to me, one I haven't seen and I haven't bought yet. That's the one I'm looking for. That's the Holy Grail. 14 years old, my grandparents took my little brother and I to visit a great aunt and uncle in Southern California. We went deep sea fishing with Pop. We went to Knott's Berry Farm, and I begged my grandfather, Pop, to take me to Bertrand Smith's Acres of Books, 240 Long Beach Boulevard, Long Beach, California. How I knew of this shop, I couldn't tell you. Pop drove me to Long Beach. He sat out and baked in the sun, chain smoking unfiltered Camel cigarettes that would kill him from lung cancer at an early age of 62, while I roamed literally the acres of books. And I bought a Alice in Wonderland giant poster book. I bought a beautiful Maxfield Parrish illustrated edition, The Arabian Nights. I bought a Gwynedd Hudson illustrated edition of Alice in Wonderland. I had no idea she was a Welsh artist at the time, and she only ever illustrated one other book in her entire lifetime, Peter Pan, and The Piece de Resistance, one of my favorite books to this very day, even though I no longer have this copy, sadly, is a double elephant, huge portfolio of Poe's The Raven, with every quatrain of the poem having an engraving by the famed illustrator Gustave Doré. That's one of my favorite books of all time.
Wow. You say the one that you appreciate the most is the one you're searching for. What are you searching for right now?
Well, that's the serendipity and the beauty of this business, and something you can't get from the internet or Amazon or eBay, which, by the way, do you want to hear my definition of eBay?
Of course I do.
eBay is a mighty confluence where ignorance meets greed. The serendipity of having an open bookshop, to be able to browse, to be able to smell the books, to touch the books, to put your nose in them, to put your eye tracks all over them, and turn that corner and find something that you never knew existed before. That eureka moment that occurs inside my shop multiple times every day. The younger generation of people, which we dearly, dearly love, despite how I don't understand them, that's what, to them, my store is a museum. And I love it because we're able to expose them to things that, you know, they never dreamed of before. And that's just a great feeling. I'll never get tired of that.
How has the pandemic affected the shop?
Well, like the entire rest of the world. Holy crap. How do we even know yet? Are we sure we even know? I feel very, very blessed in many ways. Here on our first anniversary for almost all of us of the pandemic, the bookshop is still standing. I have... six of us full-time employed, still at the store. I pay their salaries, their 100% of their health insurance. And none of us have gotten COVID yet. I, as we speak, have had both of my shots, and my staff is slow. They're, some of them are really young, so they're not quite eligible yet. It's been a year like unlike anything we've ever gone through. I can't compare to my own travails to those that have lost spouses and children and grandparents and loved ones. I've been spared that, and I feel grateful and lucky for that. But we've got 2,000 fellow Utahns, 550,000 Americans, and what, 2.5 million global citizens dead from this pandemic that slightly over 1 year ago, none of us, most of us, had ever heard of. I feel lucky to be alive. I feel lucky to be able to continue to do book selling. I hope if I can reinvent myself one more time and find a new home, that we will continue to do it for, another 5-10 years, maybe. I think I got that in me. Mm-hmm. But one thing I should make clear, Weston, July 24th, Pioneer Day, as it were, my brain trust, fans, friends, trusted business advisors, customers, pushed me into doing a GoFundMe. We opened that on July 24th. It's been, eight months ago, roughly, and almost 2,500 people have donated almost $140,000 of the $250,000 goal we set to help save Ken Sanders' rare books. And I got to tell you, this is possibly the most overwhelming and humbling experience that I've ever gone through. Yeah, I recognize a few hundred of the names, but most of these thousands of people that are giving money to save Ken Sanders' rare books, I don't know who you are. And I'm blessed and I'm grateful to every person that donated $5. It's just, it's completely and utterly, it's just, it's overwhelming. That's what it is, overwhelming.
That's beautiful. We need to get that. We need to get it all the way to the goal and over the goal. We'll make sure that we push that out. I have to ask you though, you were close friends with Edward Abbey. What did he mean to you?
Yeah, Ed and I were pals. Sure, I met him. A lot of people have accused me of being Hey Duke, but that's technically, I actually met Ed about the time Monkey Wrench Gang was first published in 1975. Ed based the four characters, the Monkey Wrench Gang, on loosely, if they're not exactly the people, but anybody that knows Grizzly Bear Man, Doug Peacock from Montana, knows that Ed Abbey based the character of Hey Duke on Peacock, just like he did Ken Slide, aka Seldom Seen Smith, down at Pat Creek. If you know those people, it's obvious. Bonnie and Doc are perhaps slightly more complicated. Ed came in the Cosmic Airplane. I recognized him. I asked him to sign some books in my rare book room. And while he was doing so, I proceeded to lecture him on what I thought of Hey Duke and Company throwing beer cans out and littering them across the highways of the West. Despite that beginning, we did actually go on to be pretty good friends. We did a lot of radical environmental stuff over the years. Ed Abbey introduced me to the radical environmental group Earth First in 1981. And throughout the 80s, we did a lot of Cataract Canyon trips down through the Green and Colorado rivers through Canyonlands National Park, and a lot of other adventures and misadventures. For 10 years, I published a Edward Abbey Western Wilderness Calendar, led to 17 different national park and wilderness calendars. That was a lifetime ago. And the thing, possibly, of in 1980, I founded my little publishing company, Dream Garden Press, and I published, I got the underground cartoonist Robert Crumb to illustrate the 10th anniversary edition of Ed Abbey's Monkey Wrench Gang, which is still in print, and that's like 36 years ago, for crying out loud. Weirdly, I published, I just thought of this, Weston. I published the Crumb Abbey Monkey Wrench Gang the same bloody year that Mark Hoffman set all the bombs off in downtown Salt Lake City, 1985.
No way. What a
weird coincidence that is. I never thought of that before. We still do the book. We sell our Crumb t-shirts, and through the gracious permission of Ed's widow and the Abbey estate, the Fisher Brewery people here in Salt Lake City came to me last fall and wanted to do a fundraiser to help raise money for KSRB, for Ken Sanders Rare Books. And what a bunch of nice guys those people are. We have now finished producing 6 different beers, one for each of the characters of the Monkey Wrench Gang, plus the whole gang, plus the Monkey Wrench. And we did t-shirts, we did posters, and people lined up for hours on end and bought them all up immediately. Now we're reduced to selling empty beer cans for $5 each. If you can imagine that. I never thought this is how I'd end up selling empty beer cans to make a living. But what a fun project. And you know what I learned? Well, the Fisher Brewery guys, their compassion and the way they help other small businesses through the pandemic and before and after is absolutely amazing. And they make really good tasting beer.
Yes, I love that. I have to ask you, you've probably met a lot of really interesting writers and authors and artists over the years. Who comes to mind that's walked through the shop door where you were just blown away that they were in your shop?
Well, ironically, I have almost no faculty for recognizing people. I know when I see once a year or something, if I've known them long enough, they will know to reintroduce themselves because I don't have a clue who I'm talking to. And this is at the big book fairs down in LA, all kinds of Hollywood types. These aren't people I know, but I couldn't recognize them if my life depended on it. But I've been really, really privileged. Ed Abbey's not the only writer. And I've been attracted to writers and of course, musicians. But my goodness, in the olden days, Barry Lopez, who recently died, you know, our own Terry Tempest Williams and I, we have been friends for probably close to 45, 50 years. She claims she and I worked at Sam Weller's bookstore together on Main Street, lo, these many decades ago. Wendell Berry, the Kentucky farmer, author of the Mad Farmer Liberation poems. I hate to pick out names like this because because I leave so many of the hundreds of people out that have affected me. Beautiful writers like Leslie Marmon Silko, whom I don't really know well, from Larry McMurtry, but really the top three that I've really became close and personal friends with were Edward Abbey, the still living Wendell Berry, and the late lamented Charles Bowden. They've had huge impacts on my life. And I've started with my friend Kate McLeod. She helped me launch this Ammo Can Library YouTube video channel with KSRB now. I recorded about a dozen kiddie shows and we're gonna kick those up again really, really soon. But also I've just been recording my favorite writers, and just because I can and I want to. And I don't have the technology. That's where people like Kate and Eric Temple come in that have been helping me produce these shows. So I've recorded Charles Bowden. We recorded me reading Gertrude Stein in the Grand Canyon. Now, Gertrude
Stein.
No way.
That's so cool.
But wait, I've done Edward Abbey. I've done Leslie Marmon Silko. I've done Wendell Berry. I've done a whole bunch of writers. I hope to get back to doing it again. There's about a dozen of them. You can find, you know, Ken Sanders, YouTube, Ammo Can Library. I've even recorded a couple of my own poems, a couple of poems I wrote during the pandemic that I'm pretty proud of. And I'm just going to keep reading not only not as much my own stuff, but other people's stuff, writers and some musicians who have made a difference in my life. And it's just, it's something I love to do. I can't wait. We're going to launch the children's book readings on Zoom with a new partnership with the Leonardo Museum, just two blocks from my existing torn down store. And that will lead, once it's safe, we'll start doing like some kind of, you know, monthly live kitty show reading. And I have two grandchildren that I'm going to go see here in a few weeks. I haven't seen them in 15 months because of the pandemic. They live out in California right now. I can't wait to go see them. They've watched some of my children's shows, and I love reading to kids. I love reading to adults. I love reading. I love to read things out loud. And why not do the things that we love? I mean, we all have to make a living, but the filthy lucre, that can't be the drive. That can never be the drive. You know, money has never been a god to me. It's a tool. I can't claim to be all that smart at using it, but here I am.
As a writer, as you think back on your career in writing, like you said, you've published numerous things over the years. How often were you writing every day?
No, writing is a discipline. I'm one of the most undisciplined people you have ever met in your life. If in 1970, I had two big choices, I could have gone, I watched President Richard Nixon on what I say is the first real and the only authentic reality TV show ever to be produced. Watched him pull out birthday numbers for us to go to Vietnam and get killed live on TV. I chose not to go to Vietnam, even though I got a number. I chose not to go to the University of Utah in the fall of 1970. I would submit to you more than 50 years later, possibly one of those two decisions wasn't a good one. But Ed Leeders would have kicked my ass, the retired English professor up there. He turned out generations of great writers, including Terry Tempest Williams. He would have made me into a writer. I write, but I mostly it's unfinished, and there's just endless piles of pads and pads full of handwriting. That some things I get finished. I'm doing a little bit better these days. I'm really, really proud of my pandemic poem called "There's a Minotaur in My Rearview Mirror." It's on the YouTube, and it's available as a broadside for sale in the store as well. I hope to do a lot more writing, a lot more substantive writing, but devil's in the details.
Would you read your pandemic poem for us to end the show?
Okay. So these are, I call these pandemic poems because I wake up at 3 o'clock in the morning a lot. And I can't sleep. And sometimes I wake up, and these two occasions I woke up, the phrase was in my head, "This is what beat looked like," she said. So I wake up, I have that thought in my brain, I grab a pad and a pen, and I write it down, and then the rest of the poem came, okay? The look of beat. "This is what beat looked like," she said, holding up a worn paperback of poetry, indented with time, coffee-stained cover, dog-eared pages, like looking into the ancient, glittering eyes of a mostly dead old beat poet, his or herself. "This is what beat looked like," she said, as if beat were something old, worn, and forgotten. I suppose, given her scant years, she at least thought she was right. But what these old crinkle eyes see is a tsunami wave coming from the agitated waters of a post-World War II Pacific Ocean, a tsunami of fresh words riding the waves all the way from Japan to the Yerba Buena Island. Words on paper from freshly cut trees, the ink still as fresh as the ideas on the pages forged by the minds of the yet to be named Beat Generation. Riding those waves straight into our third eyes and post-war zeitgeist. Holy, holy, holy. Oh, how for Ginsburg, Kerouac, and Burroughs. Oh, how for Cassidy and Ferlinghetti and Corso and De Prima. Oh, how for Wachowski and Waldman and Whalen and Welch. Oh, how for Metzger and McClure and Unke and Solomon and Patchen and Rexroth. Oh, how for Tiger and how for Snyder. How for all the pocket poets in their tattooed paperback bodies monsooning across the waters of the Yerba Buena Island, unleashing a howl on the road across America and a never-ending naked lunch. How?
You are a beautiful writer, my friend.
I'm very, very happy with those two poems, Weston. I'm proud of those two. Only took me 69 years to write them.
I have to ask you one more question.
Not a very good. Of course.
As you look back, and obviously, as you already mentioned, you're nowhere near done in terms of your career. But as you look back at your career and Ken Sanders' Rare Books and everything you've done for, you know, the community in Salt Lake and Utah and Utah history and Mormon history, what would you most want to be remembered for?
Well, for the words I haven't written. That's one of my major goals, is to work on the writing part. I've got a lot of unfinished projects I'd like to I you know, more than 30 some odd years ago, I started writing a bibliography of the works of Edward Abbey. It's really more of a biography, but not of Ed Abbey, but of his books. I'd really like to finish that. I started a iconoclast project that I commissioned the great local artist Trent Call to draw painting portraits of a dozen what I call iconoclastic Utahns, aka my word, iconoclasts. I have a suite of some dozens of those. I only have about four or five actually written. Trent has 12 of the paintings done. I've published so far Wallace Thurman, and I'm getting around to publishing the Mae Swenson one. I'd like to finish. I just so many writing projects that I've read so much good writing. I know what good writing is. I don't think I'm a bad writer, but it starts with the doing of the thing. You have to be able to do the writing and the discipline to finish it. And if you're only lucky enough to have a good editor or good editors, that's what Maxwell Perkins, what he did at Scribner's. He was the editor of Ernest Hemingway, of F. Scott Fitzgerald, Wolfe, Marjorie Kinnan Rawlings, dozens and dozens of huge writers of the 20th century. Without that kind of, as famous as they are, most people don't realize you might have never heard of them if it weren't for their editor, Maxwell Perkins. Same with Sax Commons at Random House, another brilliant early half of the 20th century editor. Good writers need good editing. And we all need good music in our lives. Good music is a blessing. We have a lot of very talented local musicians. What the hell was the question again?
How do you want to be remembered?
Oh yeah. Well, you know that the only answer I really have is through the writing, honestly, that I'm just beginning to do and haven't redone yet. The rest of it, you talk about, you know, community asset, good content, all that stuff, man, that's for other people to say, not to me. Did I do everything in my life because I was trying to, you know, be civic minded or something? Hell no, of course I didn't. I did it for my own personal and sometimes petty reasons that it can resonate. I mean, I'm very, very proud of having commissioned Robert Crumb and published the Robert Crumb illustrated edition of Ed Abbey's novel, The Monkey Wrench Gang, my Dream Garden Press. I one time I had a line of 17 different wilderness national park calendars. That's too long a story to tell. I'm very proud of that. Many of the books, some of the books I published, I have to I what was I thinking? Why did I do that? A lot of it, we just had fun, whether it was Utah Gateway to Nevada or Trent Harris's Mondo, Utah. We had a lot of fun with them. And, you know, certainly that's a lot of what it's about. I'm very proud of that I created. I had two partners, and we, in the old Cosmic Airplane days, I created the bookstore out of the old hippie head shop. I'm very, very proud of that accomplishment. I'm proud that I founded my little publishing company. And I think we've tried to do good things. We're still trying. And it's not stuff it's not about publicity or credit all the time. I mean, we're quietly just begun this program working with schools that through a local charity and thrift store, we're going to start taking, and I'm working through principals and librarians at our elementary schools in this valley, and we're going to just start giving them boxes of 100 books at a time, children's books, to give to the kids. So, you know, it's more important that they stay healthy and they read and they get educated and all of that. I don't know how much I can help with that, but I can help with the reading part. So we're going to start donating maybe 2,500 children's books, like I say, in groups of 100 at a time to every elementary school in this valley. I'd like to do the whole state, but I don't know how practical that is. And anybody that wants them, they should get hold of the store and sign up, and we'll deliver 100 kids' books to you at no cost, because the children are the future. They're the planet's future. They're the state's future. And we need them. We need them educated. And I believe in education. I believe in reading. Reading is going to help you in so many different ways. And bookstores are part and parcel of their communities. I could, given that I can't afford to pay $8,000 or $10,000 a month rent to continue on like we have been. And within the next 24 months, you know, we got 10 stories going up to the north of it, 31 stories going up the east of it. And within 24 months, it's our turn. And they're going to bulldoze me and the Green Ant and all the rest of those business. Nothing's going to be left of East Broadway. Gaping holes and giant towers will be slums in 20 years from now. Thank you very much, planning and zoning. You just, you know, to quote an Edward Abbey character, John Voglin, from Fire in the Mountain, why is it that progress always has to progress over me and the coyotes?
Ken, you are a beautiful man. We got to have you back. I could talk to you all day long about so many different things. We should probably film you in your shop one of these days when that's safe to do, before everything you just said comes to pass.
Sure. Yeah. I'm sitting home. I'm sitting home as we speak.
Ken, thank you, my friend. I really appreciate you coming on.
Weston, you're welcome. Thank you for having me.
Why does progress always have to progress over me and the coyotes? Ken Sanders, unbelievable.
That makes me want to get people who just come in on the interview, they read their original works, and then we leave, and everybody calls you Weston. That's my main desire for every single interview.
Listen, I'm not correcting Ken Sanders. Ken Sanders can call me whatever he wants. It does not matter to me. He called me Weston throughout the show. That's because on the Zoom thing, it says Weston.
Yeah, we need to fix that. It's more our error than anybody else's.
It's our error, and I will never... He can call me Weston forever
he
as long as I get
to
keep talking
to him. He can call us all Weston.
Unbelievable. And I just want to tell everyone, so that was an unbelievable interview. That's Ken Sanders, a local legend, a world legend,
mm-hmm.
Utah legend. He read a poem in during that, and he actually read two poems. And we're going to end this show with the second poem that he read for us, which is so beautiful.
Little bit of a teaser. Stay tuned.
So beautiful. That was, I love talking to Ken. We're going to have Ken back on far more. Just an incredible man.
People who are real poets are actually badass. That's a true statement.
Ken's a poet.
I know he is. That's what I'm saying.
Ken's real, dude.
He's a real poet.
You think you're real?
No,
what about Ken?
I don't think I'm real nor a poet. Neither of those things.
Ken Sanders is going to end this show with an incredible and beautiful poem. But first, here's why though.
There are people who always show off their crazy socks. Why, though? So there's a story that I want to tell to set the stage here. And it ties into what we've been doing recently. You know, Beehive Startups has been relaunched. Part of Beehive Startups is a festival called Startfest. You know, early stage startup kind of shenanigans where people get together. They do their thing, talk about it, laugh about it, all the good
exchange
stuff.
Exchange some business
exchange
cards.
A card or two. Oh, give me
a
LinkedIn info. Oh, baby. I'm talking the good stuff, right? So the first year we had Startfest, it was in Provo, Utah, on Center Street there, right? And as one of the events there, we had John Curtis, who was the Provo mayor at the time, who is now a United States congressman. Mm-hmm. He came and had some sort of weird conversation with you in the theater there. I can't remember what it's called.
There's Covey Center, dude.
Covey Center, okay. So the Covey Center theater part. You and John Curtis, you sit down. In the business, they call it a fireside chat. There's no fire. I don't know what that means. If you're actually next to a fire talking, you would talk about none of the things you talk about.
We fireside chatted it up.
If you're actually next to a fire, you're just like, ah, life is cool. Oh, man, this is chill. And instead, a fireside chat at an event like that, it's, you know.
Oh, yeah.
So how did you get your start in business? Mm-hmm. And you go, oh, great question. That's usually how it plays out, okay? So John Curtis is there. Talking to you, and one of his things, which I'd seen prior but really jumped out at this time, he goes, oh yeah, he's crossing his legs up on his ankles on his knee, and he goes, check out these sick socks that I got. You know, I always wear Stance socks around. They're wacky and crazy, dude. Check these out. So I can't remember what the socks were at the time, but you know, it's like it's a orange and red check or something. Who knows what they are, okay? And he goes, yeah, I wear socks like this all the time. They're nuts, dude. And everybody in the crowd's lapping up. They're going, dude, this guy's wacky. He's crazy. He's crazy. He's off the cuff. He's got a lot of stuff going on. So you're talking about it. And the climax of the fireside chat was he got a cannon, an air cannon type thing, right? And he brought wacky socks with him. He goes, I got sick socks for people in the crowd. And he starts blowing them out in the crowd. And he's like smoking these.
It was actually scary.
It was genuinely scary. Like they were coming at much too high of a velocity for this small of a theater.
Yeah.
So he's got these cannons that are meant to shoot to the upper reaches of the Vivint Smart Home Arena. And instead it's this 300 person theater. And he's going to these people that are like 20 feet away. Bam, bam. So they're whizzing all around and everybody's just going, give me the socks. And they got what they wished for, but they paid a price. Right?
Oh, just like life.
Just like life. There was a lesson to be learned
just
in there.
Just like life.
But that's not for me to speak on. What I want to speak on is this was the first day that I understood, oh, yeah, there's these people that always wear, they have the fashion item that's wacky, and they go, check this out. This is just kind of my shtick. And one of those things that's really prominent, and I've noticed it ever since that time, is there are certain people in life that have the wacky sock thing, you know, which at first I'm going, man, these people, they're cool. How do they get these socks?
How do they think of that?
Wear them? How do they think of it? You know, I think these are like trailblazers almost, you know? And then I find out, I'm going, what's Stan? Oh, Stance is this cool company. Oh, it's that Jeff Curl guy. He ties in kind of you. What's going on there? Then I find out that you can just buy these socks anywhere at any time. Yeah. And Stance socks are great socks. Like, I have Stance socks now.
Stance socks are the best socks. You got Jeff Curl. He was there. You got Clark Misaki.
All right, it's not a fireside chat here, okay?
NBA deal.
There's no
fire.
We
need to have Clark on to talk about how he got Stance to do
we
the NBA
Clark,
socks.
We need Clark. We need Jeff.
Oh, my goodness. It's a story.
I would like for us to recreate a fireside chat atmosphere in here where we all cross our legs and we go, so, Clark, how did you start business? And he goes,
you
notice
my socks, Clark?
He goes, great question. And then I cross my legs and I go, I mean, you can't help but noticing I'm wearing the old Jack Nicklaus Golden Bear.
It's so funny you just brought up John, because I just did a fireside with him 2 weeks ago.
Oh, I didn't even know
this. And the very first thing he did.
Oh, my,
I was actually wearing, show the full shot, the studio. Oh, you can see I'm wearing no-show socks right now. And I was wearing no-show socks at the time because, like, we've grown up. We're adults.
Yeah, we're adults.
I gotta wear the no-shows. Adults wear no-shows.
We gotta show a little class, okay?
So I was wearing no-shows at this fireside, and he did the cross-leg thing.
Yeah.
And he's like, why are you wearing no-shows? Look at these bad boys. And he showed me his socks. This is 2 weeks ago.
Look, he's got a perversion with socks that I don't want to get into. I don't know where it arose from.
I definitely
want to
get into it.
Actually, I do. Maybe I could write your questions for your next fireside. You go, so John, you seem to have some sort of sexual perversion that's tied into Stance socks and you wearing them and talking about it?
It's not just Stance socks, because Stance are way expensive. Stance are like $15-$20 a pair.
Oh, I know, dude. I got a subscription.
We got it.
It was gifted to me.
Talk about the NBA deal.
It was gifted to me.
The NBA deal. Beautiful. Oh, Nike has everything in the NBA, but they don't have the socks.
That's actually really cool. That is kind of cool.
That's so cool. And he gets, well, they do now, because Nike stole it from him. But still. He had Stance socks, I think, for 2 years.
Yeah, yeah.
Kobe wore Stance.
Everybody wore Stance. Everybody wears Stance. Okay, back to the actual socks. This is what I kind of want to discuss, okay? Because I started dabbling around the internet. I just go, what, you know, what writing is there? There's always funny writing about any subject. Mm-hmm. And especially when it comes to the wacky sock people. I go on the internet, I go, what's up with these wacky socks? What's going on in this world? And my Google searches, they all point me to a very specific area, which every Google search does. It's so awesome. There's always business people with thoughts. Mm-hmm. And I go, this is what it means in the business world. And because business people control the internet, all the top searches for wacky socks, they're all these business musings, okay?
Oh, yeah.
So now I'm going to places, you know, I'm like, oh, what? There's some article on Inc.com about what it means when you wear wacky socks as an entrepreneur.
Inc.com.
I love this stuff, dude. I freaking love it.
Who has a three-letter domain? Inc.com.
Good point. Oh, I'm so cool with my three letters.
Three-letter.com.
Oh, look at my cool ink socks.
Inc.com. Inc.com. CEO.com. Whoever does these things is so stupid.
Yeah, they're losers. They're actual losers. Do you know who aren't losers? People who wear crazy socks. Because now I pulled a few lines that I want to spitball with you and see how you feel about them, okay?
Okay, okay.
Because you, a modest man.
I'm modest.
Well, actually, you're not fully modest.
Ooh, little skin. See those ankles.
The most modest would be the Hanes crew, you know, where you can't, you see just the white sock.
No logo.
You can't see top. You can't see bottom. There's no skin. When it rises up a little, people still see the sock. They go, that guy's here for business and business only. You know, he's not going to try to ask me out on a date or lean over the table to kiss me. You know, you're sitting there talking to Clark and you're not going to lean over and try to peck him.
No, I would.
Okay, you might. You're less modest than I thought. However,
I'd love to kiss Clark.
Here's the first line. When we don our silly and crazy socks, we are in part showing off our uniqueness and our confidence.
Interesting.
Do you think that?
No.
Okay.
But I do think it's fun. I think it's fun. Like, I have some crazy socks. You've seen them.
Oh, I got some crazy socks.
Listen, when I want to let my personality shine, I put on the socks. Where I really want to show people who I am as a person.
Here's the problem.
Just some wacko socks. They're like, that guy's a wacko.
They go, look, I thought that guy was nerdy as hell and a loser. He's a little wackier than I thought. He's got, you know, Boba Fett
Wacky.
Socks. He's got Boba Fett
Wacky
socks.
Wacky.
He's got a playful side.
I have Cosmo the Cougar socks.
He's got okay, that leans in more to
really
like the
do.
Nerd ass who's a loser.
I have Cosmo the Cougar socks. They're so cool. I have socks that have the Salt Lake Temple on them.
That okay. Where are you getting these from?
I have
what
socks.
Kind of, wait,
that
hold
have
on. Where are these coming from? Did you make them?
I get gifted. Everyone's like, that guy's wacky.
Look.
Get him some wacky socks. Put the temple on some socks. Give them to him.
I'm not a person who judges people. You know this. Now's the time that you can say on air, if you yourself knitted these socks, you can tell me.
If I could,
is a safe space. Like, if you were there with the needles and thread, and you're going, you're crocheting and stuff.
I don't have that talent.
And you hold it up, what's there? Like a really freaky bad version of Cosmo's face. And I go, what is that? You go, Cosmo the Cougar Baby.
If I had the talent, I have socks that I'm always given socks. It's now you're saying this. I'm given socks all the time that are like, I have random things. I have socks of like a, what do they call them? Like a woman. A pin.
You didn't know what a woman was called?
A woman.
Not men. What's the other?
So there's men
and like, what's the other thing that I
Do they call
women,
them like
women?
Models or pinups or something? Like, I don't know what it is, but like, it's like a scantily clad cartoon woman.
Oh, okay. Cool.
That someone gave me. Somebody's like, this guy's a freak.
Yeah.
A total whack.
They're like, this guy doesn't know what women is. We need to give him something to remind him.
This guy's a total wacko. Let's give him a scantily clad cartoon woman pair of socks and have him walk around. I go to my next fireside. You see me, bad boys?
John Curtis, check out these plaid socks that are crazy. You cross your legs. It's just some pornographic image of a woman. You're like, so this is, what are these called again, John? That's a woman. He goes, yeah. So these, this woman on the sock, it reminds me of my wacky personality. You know, I'm like a free spirit. I don't care if you're clothed or not clothed. It doesn't matter to me.
It's become a class symbol is what it's become.
Okay,
like to
like
have
this.
Like stance socks or to have like kind of the wacky socks, that means in my mind now, it didn't used to mean this to me maybe 5-10 years ago, but what it means to me now is you've got some money. You've got some disposable income.
Yeah, that's where I always arrive at the problem destination for any of these things, because sooner or later it's just taken and warped into like, this just means you're richer than I am. Dang it. You know? Yeah. If you can have a nice stance subscription.
If you have a stance subscription,
cheap,
those no stance is the best sock out there.
Correct.
There's no question about it. We should have Clark me a sock on the show. I'd love to talk to
him. Dude,
about
I'd love to settle him down for a fireside talk. Just roast a few logs with him.
They're the best socks, but they're also they're expensive. There's no way other way to say it. And so now what I think you're showing even more than your wacky personality is just how much money you have.
Well, this goes contrary to the next line I'm about to read you, okay? Because it talks about people who wear plain socks versus the crazy socks. The plain black socks allows us to hide ourselves into the background of social norms, whereas a nicely colored pair of socks is, in essence, giving two fingers up to the conforming attitudes of many of those around us.
That's so stupid. Who wrote that?
You don't like ink?
Who wrote that?
This is an ink.com musing, dude.
Ken Sanders would never say that.
You know what?
An actual writer, Charles Bowden.
Here's a good idea. We get Ken
Sanders.
Think
Bowden would say that? He was risking his life in Mexico.
We get Ken Sanders here for a fireside chat. He reads us his really good poems. We read him ink.com snippets. We go, give me your thoughts on this.
Do you think wacky socks are the
are
middle finger
the
to society?
Are giving the double middle fingers to the social conforming norms? Like John Curtis is wearing stance socks and he's flipping two birds at society? You think you can contain me? These are yellow plaids today. These are wacky as hell. It costs $15, dude. That's so cool. The ink thing goes on to talk about an actually very interesting study where they like show people, they have two dudes. They show the one dude, he comes out, you know, he's like a, does his own modeling thing or just kind of walks around. And it's one dude wears an off the peg suit, just like, mm-hmm. you know, you go buy it at JCPenney's for whatever, $20. And then there's the other dude who's like nicely tailored and he's got all the kit and caboodle, everything's fit to his body. And he comes in after and everybody in the test, the case study, they're like, that second guy is just badass. He's confident, he's successful. And they like, they ask him how they feel about each of these guys. The first guy just gets pissed on, dude. They're like, that guy sucks. He doesn't have anything going for him. And the second guy, they're like, what? I mean, just what a CEO. Like an incredible leader, probably. And they know nothing about them, except they just looked at the two people. Which is so funny when you actually think about it, right? It's fantastic.
Oh, my gosh.
This goes into, so the whole ink.com article, all it is, over and over, it's just like, okay, you not only gain confidence from how you project yourself, but other people, they make judgments based upon just your appearance. And so if you put the nicely tailored suit on stuff, then people see you and they go, that's a successful, confident man. I already believe in him and I already think all these things. That goes completely contrary to my actual own philosophy, which I do believe sets you up for success, which I've said many times in this podcast, of setting the bar as low as possible, right?
Yeah, you go low.
Because as low, the lower you can go, if you put the bar on the ground, you know, you wear the rattiest stuff. You got the no-show socks, but then they look beneath, not even any socks at all.
No socks at all.
Okay? We're talking a low, low, low bar. At any point, if you do anything, and I mean anything, then people go, that's better off than I thought that person would do. Whereas when you set the bar super high, let's say I walk in, nicely tailored suit, the nice coiffed hair, all this stuff, and you go, Chris is going to be a leader. He's going to be a badass today.
No.
And then I just do all of my normal stuff. You go, well, this guy's falling completely short of my expectations.
I don't think suits are what we've all been taught they are. Suits suck. If you're wearing a suit, you've failed in life.
Oh.
That's my thought. Suits, have you ever worn a suit?
No.
They suck so bad.
I truly haven't
to wear.
Worn I actually have not worn a suit. That's a true statement.
And you gotta have the tie, and the tie's like too tight.
I don't know how to tie a tie.
Yeah, you
all
to
of
do
these
a
things
on.
Are problematic.
You'd have to do a clip on, but you gotta tie the tie, and you gotta like everything's just like ugh. And the tailored one, the baggy ones are way cool. Governor Herbert. He's like, I'm going
badass.
I'm going nice and easy.
I would see Governor Herbert.
I'm going to be comfortable.
Suit just billowing out in the wind. And I go, that guy's setting the bar low as hell. He's going to supersede it.
Governor Herbert, he's like, I'm lounging. I am in a suit because I'm the governor of Utah, but I'm going to be comfortable by doing it. The super tailored ones where you're adjusting constantly.
Who's the lucky bastard guy?
Oh, that's Greg Hughes. He's tailored.
Greg Hughes. That okay, these are two good comparisons. Greg Hughes, everybody sees him and they go, this guy's going to lead our great state. Then he does anything and you go, no, this guy, he's not the leader that I thought he would be based on the tailored suit. Gary Herbert, like, you can't tell if it's a Snuggie. You can't tell how much actual material there is. It could be 50 suits rolled into one. You never knew.
I think the reason why they're worn, maybe women like men in suits. Is that true?
Yeah.
Kelly's saying yes. That's fascinating.
Oh, sure. We just got to go and peacock around for everybody.
We're going to show off.
Oh, I got to show. No, now I'm flaunting the old feathers out for everybody to see. My sexuality is just bare for all.
Why do women like men in suits?
Well.
Chris?
As the expert on what women like.
Is that why we do it?
I mean, I think everybody does.
I'm wearing a suit 3-4 times a week. Am I doing it for a woman?
Yeah, I do think everybody does whatever they do with sex in mind. That is true, you know?
Not me.
But, well, yeah, I set the bar low. So it's like, you know, who knows how this is going to turn out. But if I do anything, there's a chance. There's always a chance, you know?
I honestly think S, and I won't even say the full thing.
Yeah.
I think S is disgusting. I won't even say the full word. I don't. That's my rule.
I don't think this is like a cool moral hill for you to die on.
That's my
look,
rule.
A lot of people say that vile word. I won't even say it.
That's me. The socks are cool. I
no,
like when people wear the socks.
No, okay, the socks are fine.
But they're not. They don't have anything to do with your personality.
The talking about them and identifying as like a wacky sock person, and this is where my personality is shown. No, 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 that's out the window. You can't do that.
Yeah.
Anybody can go buy sense. You know, I could just get them at any point.
Well,
if I wanted to be a wacky stance person,
I have a little disposable income.
Okay, not anybody, but you get what I'm saying. If I wanted to be a wacky socks person, I could just go and get wacky socks from Walmart with my Walmart Plus membership.
Yeah, they
get,
have
you know,
everywhere.
A few cents off, $3 pack or something. Then I'd wear them and I'd go check out these wacky socks, and nobody would know that they're stance unless they really leaned in.
Ooh, yeah, no one would know.
They'd go, "Are those great value?" And I'd go, "Don't worry about it.
They're stance. Give me a break. I got disposable income.
Don't worry about it. I got money to burn."
All right, let's get to Dear Utah. But first, a quick word from our sponsor, Homie. If you have a question or comment about Utah, email us at DearUtah@TheBeehive.com. You can also hit us up on social media. We're at TheBeehiveHQ. Use the hashtag DearUtah. And we will respond.
We will.
We'll answer.
We will come with some.
Do whatever you want.
Takes, dude.
All right, Claire sent us an email.
Okay.
So she sent an email to DearUtah@TheBeehive.com. Claire says, what is the weirdest thing in your parents' or grandparents' home?
Okay, I never go to my grandparents' house because there's only
Why?
One. Well, there's only one alive, and now it's a pandemic, so I can't go there.
What are you, an AH?
I don't know what that is. I can't follow the abbreviations. You're going to have to make a list for me.
What are you, some sort of AH?
If you could make a nice list of this is what these letters mean, then I would understand what you're saying. I can't. I don't know what you're saying.
I don't like that you don't visit your grandparents.
Well, I can't, you know. I only have one grandparent currently alive.
That doesn't matter.
Yeah, I can't visit
There's
them.
No rule like, oh, you have to have four. Then you can grow.
Look, a lot of us are lucky. We got all of our grandparents everywhere. They're all over. I got 50 grandparents. I got one. Think I'm proud of it? No, okay? But I can't visit them. It's a pandemic. She's 90. I can't go over there. Okay? That's a huge deal. That's a huge thing. Think about that for a second. Everybody's got 50 parents. I got one. And I can't even visit them. That's called being left out in the cold.
That's so intense.
So I don't know what's going on at my grandparents' house is what I'm trying to say. I can only speak about my parents' house because I do see my parents, you know?
Yeah.
The weirdest thing that's there, I actually had this conversation with my mom the other day because they're getting ready to move houses. Mm-hmm. And I was just kind of talking with her going, you know, it's crazy. You're going to have to move all this. There's so much weird stuff here. You're going to have to move it. She's like, yeah. And me, the big proponent of you got to throw everything away if you haven't used it in a week. I go, Mom, you should. I know that this goes contrary to how you kind of do your business, but you should chuck almost everything you have and you'd love it. You'd be so happy. And she's like kind of buying into. She goes, you know what? There's more truth to what you say than I would have previously thought, especially now that she's taking into account everything that's there that needs to be moved, mm-hmm. right? And so I go, you know, the number one thing is that you just need to throw away everything. She goes, what? And I go downstairs. If you go downstairs into the basement there, you know, the entire thing is just filled with kids' mementos, mm-hmm. right? So I have, there's seven siblings total, including myself. So there's a bunch of kids that came out of my house, right? And now the youngest one, he's 20 or 21 or whatever. And so pretty much everybody is out of the house. And so left behind are all these like keepsakes and little mementos. Oh, this is Lisa's third grade box where she wrote all, oh, here's all her cool third grade stuff. Oh, and here's the fifth grade box of Rachel and this and this. So there's just a huge thing everywhere of all these things. Okay. They haven't been open in 25 years. Nobody in the history of the world will ever look inside any of them. Right. They're just all these terrible drawings and like bad essays from these kids that are now adults that don't even care about them. Okay. So I go to my mom and I go, all the stuff from everybody's childhood, toss it, chuck everything out.
Whoa.
And she goes, oh, I can't. And I go, Mom, when is the last time anybody looked at that stuff? She goes, yeah, that's a good point. I couldn't even tell you. And I go, this is just a dead weight. You know, everybody wants it there because they go, oh, I need a connection to my childhood. And if I ever need to go and look at my third grade drawings, I can do that. But in actuality, they just want the like safety net of having that around. They're never going to look at that. Why would you? You'd be a freak. If I was going through my own third grade drawings and I came to you and I go, Clint, guess what I did last night? I went through my third grade artwork.
I think that was so cute.
Okay. Well, you're a freak, as the socks are showing us today.
Well, this is cute AF, dude.
But I even got my mom on board. I go, this is the weirdest thing that is just taken for granted in people's houses, right? When kids get old, they leave all of their stuff from their childhood behind. They don't take it with them. If they truly wanted it, they would take it. You know, if I was going to use something, I wouldn't leave it at my parents' house. I'd take it with me. Mm-hmm. And instead, everybody goes, oh, that's fine. Just leave it at mom and dad's house. And so now I'm the main proponent. I'm in my parents' ear. I go, you got to toss it. You got to toss everything from the past. Throw it away. Burn it. And if anybody asks them, if you go, you want this stuff? Come and get it. Get it out of here. I don't want to hear about it again. I'm not going to sit there and go through your third grade yearbook. So that's the answer to the question, which is the weirdest thing that's in anybody's house. And nobody ever thinks it's weird.
No, are these keepsakes? I have something weirder.
Okay. These keepsakes from childhood that are actually not keepsakes. They can't be displayed anywhere. Nobody's ever going to look at them. Get them out. That's what I want to say.
In my parents' house, there's signs with words on them.
what types of words? Explain.
Like home. Like
that. I mean, like a clear identifier of what?
No, that's the thing. There's like this nice like
craft. Kitchen.
No, there really is like things like that and like
living room. It'd be cool if everything was just labeled above the couch. Couch. chair.
I think they have one like all because two people fell in love or something.
Oh, I hate that. I hate that so bad. I can't even describe it.
Like there are the crafts, like the signs in the pictures with words on them, just like words, like really like basic words, like home. Home's a big one. It's like in cursive or something.
If I was living with somebody and whatever we had there at our disposal was signified by a picture or whatever this is, and it says, all because two people fell in love, I would be so bummed out. I'm like, this is what it is? This is what it meant? We now have a couch that's labeled as couch because we fell in love? What are we talking about?
It's like home is where the heart is.
I don't need reminders of that. That's the problem with these things.
Yeah.
Whenever those things are put out into the world, I go, well, this just means that you're putting on a show for me. You don't believe any of this. You need to be reminded that this is your own home? No. Whenever I walk into my home, I know it's my home. I don't need a sign on the wall, right? I don't need another sign that goes, this is because one person couldn't find love and he just was alone. I don't need that sign at home. I know why I'm alone, right?
I think the signs with words are super weird. I don't know who started that.
What if I lean into it and I actually put up stuff that was true about my life and my state of being? And I walk
sad.
In, and sad. And it's over the chair. And that's where I sit when I'm sad. I go, And then the main sign that welcomes everybody and it's huge, it goes, because one person couldn't find love. And it's just a little etching of me beneath it. And I'm just kind of there like, See, that would push it back in everybody's face, you know? Everybody who's in a relationship, they always want to rub it in your face. They go, oh, look at me, I'm in a relationship and you're not. Let me show you all the things in the house mm-hmm. that came about because of a relationship. And now mm-hmm. I'm going to go, look at all the things that came about because I wasn't. Mm. I got a recliner. I don't got to worry about somebody else sitting, so I don't got to get a couch. It costs more money.
Love lives here.
That's See, I would have that one. I go, love isn't here. If that's what you're looking for, leave.
No love here is what yours would say.
Absence of love.
That's a good one, Claire. Everybody send us what is the weirdest thing in your parents' or grandparents' home. I'd love to figure that
out. I actually would like to hear people's takes on that.
That'd be super interesting. So use the hashtag DearUtah to do that. That's the show. That's the entire
another
show.
Another day, another dollar.
Another day in the books. As I mentioned, Ken Sanders is going to perform another poem to end this show. Signing off for Chris Rall, Kelly Jansen, and Weston Tanner. My name is Clint Betts, and this has been another episode of The Beehive. Here's Ken Sanders.
I got a minotaur in my rear view mirror passing me on the right. Reflection or reality? I can no longer tell my wrongs from my rights. My thoughts are not nearly as dreadful as his driving, and I have no way to know if he has me in his sights. I may be down for the count, but I've still got some fight. I got a minotaur in my rear view, and things don't exactly look right. The darker it gets, the more I see the light. I got a minotaur in my rear view. At the center of the labyrinth, therein lies my plight. If I can only find my way in by the dying of the light. But the minotaur in the rear view hides everything from my sight, and I can no longer tell my days from my nights. I want a second chance, but what I need is second sight. And if my days are numbered, ditto for my nights.